Today's edition of the Derek Hunter Podcast is brought to you by Ancient Life Oil.
What is Full Spectrum CBD? Full Spectrum CBD is all the cannabinoids, which in turn gives you major effectiveness. CBD isolate is much less effective than Full Spectrum CBD. No herbicides, no pesticides, pure organic, non-GMO, Full Spectrum CBD. Where do you get the good stuff? At AncientLifeOil.com. That's AncientLifeOil.com. Buy CBD tinctures that work. That's AncientLifeOil.com.
Alrighty, hello again everyone and welcome to it. It is the Derek Hunter Podcast for the 28th of September 2021. Happy, what day is it? Happy Tuesday to you. Whatever day it is. It's a day that ends in Y. Have a good one. I am Derek Hunter. I am your host. Welcome to the program. Appreciate the use of your ears, ladies and gentlemen. As I promised yesterday, or I guess I alluded to might be the way to put it, we have new rules for the signed book contest. You can go to patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast. They are listed there in a separate post, along with pictures of the books. And then there is a separate post up there where you can enter to win the signed books. Yes, unfortunately, for those of you who are not Patreon members, you have to be a Patreon member. This was suggested by a listener, a Patreon member. I think it's smart. There's a cost associated with all of this, and I'm going to defer some of that. So, you get the signed book, the first book to be given away. There's a lot of them. I got, books, Greg Jarrett, Molly Hemingway, Carrie Severino, who else? Brent Bozell, Liz Wheeler, you name it. There's pictures of it. You got to go to patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast, all one word, to see the books. And you will see the books that you can win in the coming weeks and months and years and years and years and whatever. And there's a lot more. I can't go running around taking pictures of books all day. So there it is. The first book is my book, Outrage Incorporated, How the Liberal Mob Ruined Science, Journalism, and Hollywood. I'll happily sign it for the winner any way they want. Personalized, impersonal, wildly impersonal, like the money's on the dresser, now get out, that kind of impersonal, or just straight sign it, whatever you want. You have to enter through the Patreon by commenting on the post. All the rules are explained there. And then you find the other post and you enter on that one. If you're a patron, it's $5 a month. So $5 a month, you get a chance to win, a book every week, signed book, not just some random book. So you can't lose, really. Go to patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast for all the explanation. If there are any questions, write them up there in the comments. The one post is for everybody that with the rules, and then the entrance post is for Patreon, so it should be explainable. And we can't figure it out. I mean, I'm doing this by the seat of my pants. What the hell do I know? My cats are advising me, and they're absolutely unhelpful. Jerks. Anyway, if you're all stressed out about all that, go to AncientLifeOil.com and get some CBD oil. That's right. It'll take the edge off. It'll help you relax while you wait to find out whether or not you win a signed copy of my book. Go to AncientLifeOil.com, 100% pure organic CBD oil, not genetically modified, nothing unnatural in there. Great price, great product, free shipping if you enter promo code Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at checkout. That's right, Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at checkout, and click apply. You got to click apply. Check it out today. Do yourself a world of good. All right, let's get on with the show, shall we? Since I've been confusing enough about all the rules for the signed book contest. But it's good to be back. A lot of stuff going on and a bunch of things to get to, as always. It always happens. I'm looking at the interwebs. And there was a train derailment out in Montana. Now, Montana, it looks like it's in the eastern part of Montana, which is incredibly flat. And they're all trying to figure out, how is this? How did this happen? Am I the only one who remembers 1995? Anybody else remember 1995? There was a train derailment out west. Look, I've got a press release here from, it's Inter Press Service. You can find it from other places. Washington, D.C., IPS. Who are the sons of Gestapo? This is the question the U.S. federal agents are trying to answer as they investigate Monday's derailment of a passenger train in Arizona. passenger train in as out west. Never figured out, as far as I know, who the Sons of Gestapo were, but there was a letter there. They'd messed with the tracks or put something on the tracks or loosened whatever they did. And they left a note, said, "We did this, we're the Sons of Gestapo." And then they went away, never to be heard from again, as far as I know. And now we've got another mysterious train derailment. Three people dead, a whole bunch of people injured. And it seems like that'd be worth revisiting if I were investigating. Anyway, that's always stuck with me, because they never found out who these people were. You never heard anything about them again. But it is part of there's a long and storied tradition of the left of sabotage, of hurting people, of blowing things up randomly and thinking, well, we're just hurting this building, not the security guard that's on the other side of this wall if we blow it up. We're just hurting this X, Y, or Z if we do that, and not the human beings involved, because they don't really consider human beings. They don't care about human beings, especially the environmentalist movement. They'll spike trees that cause saws to, basically blow up and kill, send shrapnel everywhere. They injure people all the time at a minimum. You don't hear about it because the media that would report on it is down with the cause. They're like, yeah, we get it. We like this. But it strikes me as if you're sitting there looking for suspects, there is one side. Let me try and find this, because it's just occurring to me right now that it was a couple of weeks ago that New York Magazine, I think it was embracing environmental violence. It's one of those things where you're sitting there going, what are you talking about? But there was an article about how, environmental violence is justified. It's worthwhile. It's important. It should be done because it is, the stakes are so high. And that's the thing about the left, and so much of the left, that they will and do justify, it's the ends justify the means, people. You might find that on the right. You don't really find it on the right all that much, but if you do, it would be way out on the fringe. On the left, you find it all the time, because the left makes arguments that the stakes are so high, right? It's the fate of the world, our very species' existence in this country. If people are allowed to go around and exhale, if people are allowed to go around and eat beef, it will be the end of the world. We must do something about this, and something extreme. And it is the left, the Greta Thunberglers of the left of the planet, who sit around and go, we must force people. If you will not comply, we must force you to comply. And they do this while calling you a fascist without any sense of irony or self-awareness, whatever. You're a fascist, horrible, horrible monster. And like, what is your problem? You're the one using the power of government to force your will on other people. The ultimate goal of the right, if you take conservatism to an extreme, would be a whole bunch of people free. The horror. That is actually, if you want to talk about what causes a leftist to wake up in a cold sweat, it is the concept that free people would be able to exercise their free will. Freak them out. They wouldn't know what to do with it. They would have no power. They would be irrelevant. But I'm just looking at this situation, and you see how they function, what they function in, what they do. It has to have government power. It has to. So everything has to be life or death. Everything has to be... I'm not finding this. I'll find it at some point. But everything is life and death. Everything is literally a horrible situation that if you don't act, and that's what gives them the moral... This is what's ironic about the leftists. After decades, my entire childhood, they were saying, you can't legislate morality. No legislating morality. Why would anybody try to legislate? It's wrong. It's immoral to legislate morality. And then... they now found a way to go, wait a second, we can use the word term moral to describe what we're doing in their minds. So let's do it. Let's do this thing. And so everything is a moral imperative, which is really funny because it has absolutely nothing to do with morality. And in most times is, at least in terms of traditional morality, is wildly immoral what the left is trying to do. So you watch this people argue things and you go, that's not what those words mean. It's not how human beings defined those words throughout all of their history. And they always come back to the same thing. It's we must do this. It's immoral. They just started up a giant CO2 sucking machine. Ross Perot and the giant sucking sound. Remember the giant sucking sound from Ross Perot? Well, now the left up in Iceland, I believe, has a giant CO2 removal machine. Think about that giant sucking sound. And I don't mean to laugh, because it's probably dangerous. That's the problem. And you're sitting there and you're going, what are you talking about, Derek? You're being ridiculous. No, I'm looking at the situation where the environment, we know very little about the environment. We know very little about climate. We know very little about most of these things. And we're convinced, in the name of politics, that we know what we're doing. That we know what we're doing. And so we're acting. You got Bill Gates out there going, you know what, if we just seed the clouds with ash and we can deflect a whole bunch of sunlight back into the deep reaches of space, and that will save us. And maybe it probably will deflect a whole bunch of sunlight back into space. But that'll save us from what? It won't save us from your, insanity. Nobody's asking, Bill Gates isn't asking permission to do this on behalf of every human being on the face of the earth. He's just trying to fund it to make it happen. He's got the money to make it happen. And you're sitting there going, what the hell? I didn't get a vote? You mean you're going to deflect sunlight away? The left won't admit that warmer temperatures are actually good for human beings because they don't like things that are good for human beings. Here's a story on this. The world's biggest carbon sucking machine is switching on in Iceland. We have to start removing carbon dioxide from the atmosphere to have any chance of averting the worst impacts of global warming, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change said last month. The fossil fuel economy must be run in reverse, effectively. The simplest and lowest cost way to do that is planting trees. Requires a whole lot of land relative to the scale of intervention that's needed. So a handful of companies have been tinkering with direct air capture, essentially a big CO2 sucking machines. The largest direct air capture plant in the world will open on September 8th in Iceland, operated by the Swiss engineering startup ClimateWorks. The plant, known as Orca, will annually draw down its volume of emissions equivalent to about 870 cars. Orca will boost. That's it. Orca will boost total global capacity by 50%, adding to the dozens of smaller plants that are already in operation throughout the U.S., Canada, and Europe. And you're sitting there, and there's a giant machine. I don't know how it picks out CO2. But human beings deliberately messing. How do you know when you've reached the right amount of CO2 in the atmosphere? You can't. You won't. And what do you do with, plants need CO2. That's actually how oxygen is created. If you really want to, and they say, it takes too much space. But if you really want to make a difference, if you really want to help the planet, so to speak, filter the atmosphere, then plant trees. Plant plants that produce oxygen from carbon dioxide. But they don't want that. They've scared the hell out of people, the left has, to try and get the rest of its agenda through in the name of justice. That they now have people turning private companies into James Bond villains. Like, whoa, I need a weather control machine. We need this. Bill Gates is now the perfect James Bond villain. In many ways, he is. He's friends with a child molesting pervert who killed himself, trying to seed the clouds to deflect, seed the upper atmosphere to deflect sunlight, so on and so forth. And you sit there and you think, this is how Bond villains are created. Thank God he's older to the point that he's not going to be around much longer, and he seems to be spending most of his time chasing tail around the office, if news reports of his divorce are to be believed. So there's that. But the idea that human beings are so convinced that we're ruining the planet, that human beings are now setting out ways that may well ruin the planet, is hilarious and terrifying at the same time. Because how long until somebody comes up with something, maybe these machines, it's the biggest one, it will remove a total of 870 cars worth of CO2. Not exactly earth-shattering. It looks pretty big from the pictures, but it doesn't seem to be all that effective. But somebody will come up with a way that is effective. And then what happens? And then what happens? What if they take out too much CO2? What do? You can't just switch it off. You can't just get it back. These people have convinced, in the name of politics, convinced a whole lot of people, particularly a whole lot of people with a lot of money, that things have to change. Things have to change or else it's death. Now, if you're staring into the face of the great abyss, and that's your alternative, you're at a fork in the road and you got two paths, death and saving life, death of not just death, your death, because everybody's going to die, but death of all life on the planet. And being the, you know, forget it, the greatest hero ever, if you're able to save the whole planet, my God. Those are your two choices. You're not only going to choose the one where you're the hero, you're going to charge down that, and nobody's going to be able to tell you as you're screaming down the path, yelling in the background, hey, no, that's the wrong, that's not, there's a third way over here, or maybe the other way is right, or whatever, or you're wrong. Nobody, you're not going to listen to anybody. You've convinced yourself that you are going to save the planet, save all life on the planet, and you've probably gotten your cape manufacturer on speed dial. So it'll be too late to stop you, and there will be almost no stopping you anyway because you will have convinced yourself you're doing the Lord's work. So as you look at all this stuff and how the left operates and how they function, you sit there and you wonder, who falls for this garbage? How do they fall for this stuff? What is wrong with these people? And there's a lot of going on the left that they sit there and you have to scratch your head and go, where do the people come up with these crackpot ideas? Where do they come up with this stupid stuff? And it matters less where, well, this is where it comes up from. This is where it happens. It matters a lot less and more than it matters what they want to do. But where it comes from is this kind of stuff. It starts with a simple sounding idea that when they started this, we need to basically curtail capitalism in the name of saving the planet. You sit there and you go, all right, well, we can. They were using it as a way to justify more regulations and higher taxes. Now they're using it as a way to justify the complete destruction of our way of life and the reconstruction of a socialist slash communist slash fascist utopia. Just depends on how far over the edge they go when all is said and done, if they get their way. And it's still under the same guise. It's just gotten so far. This is why if you're sitting there going, well, the political rhetoric is really getting heated up. The political rhetoric is over the top. Nobody woke up and everybody's dial was on three, where every political commentator is going, you know what, I agree to disagree with my good friend here. No, it has been inching up, and then it just suddenly bumped up to 15. No, people have been bumping it up and bumping it up for years and years and years. It's the frog in the pot of boiling water versus the frog in the pot of water that's on the stove, and you start a fire under it. You don't notice that it goes up. Everybody's concerned about the political rhetoric, the political actions are in the same boat. You've got people actively trying to dramatically change the makeup of the atmosphere of our planet in the name of a lie, a fraud, in the name of nature. We are a part of nature. If you look throughout our history, the CO2 levels in our atmosphere, from the same data the left uses to, and I don't trust the data per se, but if you just look at the data that they have, it goes up and down and up and down naturally. The biggest contributor to climate change, so-called climate change, to CO2, to problems in the air, to greenhouse gases, is not cow farts. It's volcanoes. The Earth is doing that, not us. The Earth warms up. The Earth cools down. Period. End of story. I recognize it's wildly inconvenient, and you can't advance a political agenda off of, hey, that's just the way nature is. But You also can't do massive damage to people and kill a whole bunch of people either. Just seems like something that some people would like to consider before they go heading off down the path of real, true, irreversible damage. Then again, Democrats are going to live down the road of irreversible damage, so they don't seem to give a damn. They always seem to think that they can pull up the plane before it hits the mountain. We'll see. Sadly, we'll see. Of course, there are other consequences to this, you know, environmental jihad in which the left finds itself. I don't know why I thought of this, but the Wall Street Journal had this story the other day, just last Thursday. Electric car shift drains fuel taxes in some countries, or some counties, countries. No, you're right. Now, of course it does. Of course it does. This is how they will come about with the, and eventually, you know, Pete Buttigieg floated this idea, and people got upset, rightly so. But then he didn't go away, he just stopped talking about it publicly. The idea of a per-mile tax, an idea of tracking how far you drive, how much you drive, and then taxing you based on that. Also, you know, a little computer box in there that tells government where you've been, just coincidentally, out of curiosity, not for any particularly nefarious reasons, blah, blah, blah. But the push to get people to buy electric cars is having, especially in European countries where they're really subsidizing the hell out of it. Here we just give you, well, we give you $7,500 towards the price of an electric car, which really is just a direct payment to rich people because poor people still can't afford a $40,000 car. Well, yeah, but you can get it for $32,500. Like, oh, all right. Well, then there you go. There's three times my annual salary. Let's do it. That's not going to happen. You're subsidizing rich people. But if you are funding roads by gasoline taxes and you're sitting there pushing more and more people into cars that don't use gasoline, guess what you're going to have less of? Money in the transportation trust fund. Now, it doesn't matter. They raid that money. It's all general fund money. It's such a joke. It's such an accounting scam. And if they were a private sector company, they'd all be in jail. But it is worth noting that it's going to only exacerbate the situation. Of course. They did it before. They've already been screwing up this equation that they themselves have created to fund our roads when they said that they need to continually increase fuel standards. Well, if you take a car from 10 miles to the gallon to 25 miles to the gallon, guess what you're going to need less of? Gas. Guess what that means? You're going to get less gas tax money. It's fine. People are behaving in a way that you have dictated. But now you discover that you like having that money. So then you hear arguments of we've got a tax per mile or we've got a tax, raise the gasoline tax. Neither one are particularly palatable. That's why it's so important to prevent these things from happening in the first place. Like in Maryland, they made the gas tax every year goes up as part of its peg to inflation. So they don't have to take that painful vote of raising taxes on people. They can just say, well, I didn't do it. It was automatic. If they get all the what they want to do, it'll be the same thing. You'll get tax hikes constantly, regularly, with nobody to hold accountable for it because they will have successfully insulated themselves from it. Don't let that happen. The environmentalism has become a cult. It's become a religion. It is. For all the, well, you can always tell what liberals are doing by what they're accusing Republicans of doing. It's that simple. Oh, there's a Trump of Donald Trump. Cult of Donald Trump. It's a cult. It's become, they say this all the time. It's become, you know, knee-jerk Pavlovian. Oh, Trump cult. Trump cult. Meanwhile, everything in the environmental movement really literally is cultish. Cultish. And they've got, the problem is so many companies sort of virtue signal and go, all right, well, we should do this. We should probably kowtow to these things rather than standing up. You don't even have to stand up and say, you don't have to be the tank guy in Tiananmen Square in China in 1989. You don't have to be that guy. You don't have to stand up to the mob. You just don't have to placate them. Placating them emboldens them. But they all placate them. They think that if they just are nice enough, if they just go and appease or write a check, BLM won't attack us if we write them a check. No, they won't attack you right away. But they will attack you eventually because you gave them money. They know there's more money there. For a long time, the environmental movement was funded by the ExxonMobils of the world. Why? Because they thought, well, if we just make nice with these people, they won't come after us so hard. But whenever a situation presented itself for them to go after an ExxonMobil, they did it. They availed themselves of that opportunity. They went full bore after them. There was no tempering of it because that's what they do. This is truly what they believe. This is who they are. So you'll never be able to appease the left-wing mob. Because the answer is, well, what do you need? More. Well, what do you want? More. Well, what would make you happy? More. More is the answer to everything. Look, in the acquiescence, speaking of acquiescence, McDonald's, this is from the Associated Press, McDonald's began phasing out plastic toys and Happy Meals. Plastic toys and Happy Meals. McDonald's plans to drastically reduce the plastic in its Happy Meal toys worldwide by 2025. The burger giant said Tuesday it's working with toy companies to develop new ideas, such as three-dimensional cardboard superheroes kids can build, or board games with plant-based or recycled game pieces. McDonald's says it's also exploring using recycled plastic toys to make new restaurant trays. Chicago-based McDonald's sells more than 1 billion toys each year. The company says the new goal will reduce virgin plastic use by 90% compared to 2018 levels. Already in the United Kingdom and Ireland, McDonald's restaurants are only offering soft toys, paper-based toys, or books. Burger King removed plastic toys from kids' meals in the UK in 2019. So, remember all that, I don't know if you're old enough or too old to have had a Happy Meal. I don't remember particularly any of the toys that I got, so I'm sure I eventually strapped like a firecracker to it or something. But it was a toy. It wasn't fold this here, fold, there you go. Now if you just rip off these perforations, you've got, and they're showing a minion. You've got your own little minion. Well, that's not a toy. Okay, what do you do with that? You play with it for about 10 seconds. Somebody steps on it. Somebody crinks it. And now it's worthless. So congratulations to the environmental movement. They're ruining things like this. This is no victory. Nothing is saved by this. I would argue that plastic will be used someplace else, but I would argue that if you just look on eBay and you look at the other secondary markets, go to an antique store, walk through it, you will come across a section, if it's a decent-sized antique store, you will come across a section of old McDonald's toys. And you go, wait a second, these things are worth money? And, you know, it's not F-U money. It's not like, well, if somebody buys this for $1 trillion, I shall retire. No, it's $5, $10, $20, and people collect this stuff. People love this stuff. The plastic stuff actually has a long-term life. It's not ending up, by and large, in a landfill. But this stuff, this cardboard stuff, will. And what do you make cardboard out of? You make cardboard out of trees. You got to cut down more trees to make more cardboard things so that people don't have plastic. God forbid a child have a toy that they take home with them and play with throughout their, you know, youth, their childhood, that eventually maybe gets donated to the Salvation Army or sold at a garage sale or whatever and has a longer life. Rather, they now will get origami. That they're not even going to want. Who's going to want to take this thing into a car? The picture is of a minion. The picture is of a minion from the Despicable Me movies where they folded a thing and they had the little slots and they stuffed the mustache in there. And it's great. If you're sitting there in a McDonald's eating a hamburger, staring at this thing, you think, all right, this is probably neat. Looks like it takes a couple minutes to put together. But then the kid is done eating the hamburger, probably in less time than it took to put this thing together. And this will end up in the trash. This will end up in a landfill pretty quickly. Nobody's going to go, I got to remember to bring this minion into the car. And if they do, by the time they get it home and you strap them into car seat and everything, it's going to be smashed. It's going to be wet. It's going to be whatever. And it's garbage. It will end up in the landfill faster. So McDonald's is actually going to make the problem they're trying to quote unquote solve worse in the name of progress or whatever the hell they're doing it. When it's really just a scare tactic and this is virtue signaling on behalf of McDonald's, they will all be applauded until the next time somebody says, what about cow farts? You know, the biggest beef farmer on the planet Earth is McDonald's. McDonald's is evil. Maybe McDonald's should stop trying to placate the people. If somebody tells you you're evil, somebody thinks you're evil, you're not going to win them over to your side with gestures. You're just not. Accept what they say and go about your business the way you otherwise normally would. Because that's 9 times out of 10, unless you're, you know, a psychopathic serial killer, 9 times out of 10, that's the best way to go about anything. And it's best for everybody involved. And it's not the liberal way. I want to shift it up here from, because I didn't intend on talking about the environment at all. But I want to talk about economics and the insanity of what's going on up on Capitol Hill, the $3.5 trillion spending bill on top of the $1.5 trillion spending bill on infrastructure. You got infrastructure and then the human infrastructure bill. And then you got, of course, the trillions of dollars that they've already committed to spend and everything that's going. It's amazing how these people just spend money. And what are they doing that right now? With this $3.5 trillion spending bill, it's in trouble because two Democratic senators and some Democrats in the House, although not all, known in the House, they haven't come out and identified themselves publicly yet. Although if AOC finds out who they are, she'll definitely come out and tell the whole world who they are and sick her army of flying monkeys on them. AOC is the type of person that turned in Anne Frank's family. They really are. They're near the end of the war. The Germans are starting to retreat, and somebody finds out there's a family of Jews hiding in the attic. And somebody, we don't know who, says, hey, there's Jews up there. And of course, the Germans went and got them because they were evil, evil people. But the more evil, or just equally as evil, is whoever turned them in. AOC would turn them in. AOC would turn anybody and everybody in. If you aren't with her, you are her enemy. And any and all tactics are perfectly justified and justifiable in going after her political enemies. But we don't know yet who these people are. They're trying to make nice. They're trying to pull together a deal. And in the case of the $3.5 trillion human infrastructure bill, they're trying a new tactic, and it was tried out on the Human Potatoes show, the little weeble with arms, Brian Stelter's show on Sunday. Reliable Sources, it's kind of a funny name, considering that it's supposed to cover the media, but it's just straight-up propaganda for the Democratic Party. They don't even bother covering the media, except for to the extent that they complain about Fox's existence. He had on, the Weeble had on Catherine Rampell, I believe that's how you pronounce her name, from the Washington Post. She's a columnist at the Washington Post on economic issues, and she is also a CNN contributor, of course, because, I don't know, you have to be a special kind of stupid or really bad at your job to be a reporter at the Washington Post and not have a CNN contributorship. I don't know how you don't get one. But Catherine Rampell was on there talking about the $3.5 trillion in spending that Democrats want to ram through and remake the country, have the government providing child care, have the government providing this, that, and the other thing, you name it, and there's the government providing it. And she made some absolutely absurd, stupid, just, I mean, there's no other word for it, just incredibly stupid claims that are worth mocking. But it's the argument. This is what Democrats are arguing. That essentially, this bill doesn't cost anything. It's paid for. Which is, well, I'll tell you about it when we get to it. But first, listen to the Weeble and Catherine Rampell talk about this thing.
About the coverage of these budget battles, if you could change anything right now. So there are so many things, but I think my number one priority would be more discussion of what's actually in the bill, as opposed to this top line figure, which itself is misleading, of $3.5 trillion. There are good ways to spend a huge sum of money. There are bad ways to spend a huge sum of money. But the kind of media coverage that we've been getting doesn't really explore whether the kinds of things that are in this bill are meritorious or not. I'd love to see more people commenting about, should we invest in childcare this way or paid leave that way or in climate? Instead, right, it's about the number.
Should we invest in it this way, that way, or you notice the subtleties of that? It's not, should the federal government have any role whatsoever in childcare? It's, should we invest, quote unquote, nice word, invest in childcare this way? Or is there perhaps a better way we could invest in childcare? It's the bobblehead convention. Two empty bobbleheaded people going, because we all agree with what's going on. We might disagree slightly about how to go about it. But you love it. Oh, no, there's good ways to spend $3.5 trillion. There's no good way to spend $3.5 trillion because the government doesn't generate anything. If government opened up a store selling T-shirts and that T-shirt store generated $3.5 trillion in revenue to spend for the federal government, $3.5 trillion in profit, then yeah, fine. Spend that money, government. It's your money. You've earned it. But government doesn't generate revenue. Government takes revenue. It seizes revenue under threat of prison, under threat of having more of your stuff taken. And then it redistributes that money in a way it sees fit. Another $3.5 trillion. What's that? It's going to be huge. It's going to be wildly disruptive. Now, the $3.5 trillion, by the way, is not $3.5 trillion. They say, well, it's over 10 years. So it's really only $350 billion a year. That's a lie. I mean, yes, it's over 10 years, but to keep it at $3.5 trillion, there are lots of programs that don't start for 5, 6, 7 years because they'll be wildly expensive. So if you say we're going to spend $3.5 trillion over 10 years, that's only $350 billion a year. Okay, well, $350 billion is still a lot of money. Still a lot of money. But if all of that spending starts in year 8, so you got year 8, 9, and 10, you really only have 3 years worth of spending. You're using it as an accounting gimmick, which again would send mere mortals to prison for the rest of their natural born lives. But you're using it as an accounting gimmick so you can say the overall price tag of this bill is significantly less. You know, in the first year, it's only going to cost $20 billion. Oh, okay. Yeah, because it's all backloaded. Because if that plan that costs you $350 billion over 3 years starting in year 8, if that started year 1, the cost of that program over the 10-year budget window, and the Congress always uses it's bogus, but they use a 10-year budget window, the cost of that program over 10 years would not be $350 billion. It would probably be closer to like $10 trillion. You can't have that. So since the CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, only projects out 10 years worth of budgetary outlays, if you can push you can get the apparatus in place and you get it codified in law that says year 7 this thing starts, and you only have 3 years worth of spending on a program that you know is going to balloon after that, you win. Because you're not going to be around, you're not going to be responsible for when the feces hits the fan, you're just going to be gone, and your program's going to be in place, and the people who come after you will have to find a way to deal with it. To Democrats, the most important thing is getting the program in place. They don't give a damn about the results, they're not results-oriented. If they were results-oriented, do you think they would continue to do what they do in cities like Baltimore, in cities like Detroit and Chicago? If they actually cared about human beings and were results-oriented. And I'm not talking about the murder. I'm talking about the education. I'm talking about the school systems. We're in Baltimore where you have a 1.13 grade point average and be the valedictorian. without being able to pronounce the word valedictorian or have any idea what the word valedictorian is. It's not because kids are stupid. It's because kids are not educated by the adults in charge, the Democrats in charge. They cared about results. If they were held accountable, do you think they would continue that system? Theoretically, no. But then who knows? So Catherine Rampell continues, and this is where she gets really, really, I mean, remember, this woman is paid quite well for these opinions, for the gray matter behind her vacant, soulless eyes. She is paid for this kind of stuff.
And why is the number misleading? Why is that 3.5 trillion figure misleading?
Because it doesn't really represent anything. It's this weird shorthand that's been used, but in fact, the bill itself will not cost $3.5 trillion in the sense that it will be entirely or at least partly paid for. So the actual cost in terms of deficits will be smaller than that, perhaps even zero, although I think that's unlikely.
It's a $3.5 trillion price tag on it. Even Democrats aren't even trying to pretend that isn't the number. And she's saying, but it won't really cost anything because it's paid for, because they jack up taxes in there. Now, there's no way that sort of tax revenue is going to be generated by this. But she's sitting there going, you know, because it's paid for. You have $30 trillion in debt. We have, this year alone, I think we're going to have a $6 trillion deficit just for this year. And she's saying, no, this is paid for. If you're operating at a $6 trillion loss already and you go, well, let's throw some more spending on it. But don't worry, this spending's paid for. It's not remotely close to paid for. It's all part of the save. It's like pretending you have two different bank accounts and your net worth is based on only one of them. Yeah, one I've overdrafted and it's way overdrawn. And like, wow, I'm like 5,000 overdrafted, probably wanted for that one. But the other one I have 200 bucks in. So I have a net worth of 200 bucks. No, you don't. You have a net worth of negative 4,200 bucks at best. But if you just pay attention to one part of the ledger, you can claim anything you want. And if you're talking to a human potato or a weeble, and you know that he's on the team, you know that he's not bright enough to recognize the problem anyway, the bizarre argument you're making, you can go ahead and say that. And he goes, oh, yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. And he goes right back to eating his sandwich or whatever the hell he does when the camera isn't on him. I assume it has to do with eating a bacon sandwich, if I had to guess. She had one more cut here. This is where it gets even more hilarious. It's bizarre because everything you just heard for the past 4 years under Donald Trump is flipped on its head in this clip. And everything you heard under George W. Bush is flipped on its head. Everything you heard under Ronald Reagan, flipped on its head in this. Remember as you go into this that tax cuts are spending. They cost government. That's what we're told. That's what we're told. It costs government. The Trump tax cuts cost government. It's wrong. It's spending on the rich, letting them keep more of their money. That's gone, apparently, when it's inconvenient for the left.
And it's not even, fully spending. It's not really right to call it a $3.5 trillion spending bill because there's probably about $1 trillion of tax cuts in it, too. So it's really hard to boil down the essence of what this legislation is because it does so many things.
It does so many things. It's not even really, there's like $1 trillion in tax cuts. Or tax cuts spending? It's not really $3 trillion in spending, $3.5 trillion in spending because $1 trillion is in tax cuts. Well, I've been reliably lectured by people just like you, Kathleen Rampell, that tax cuts are spending, perhaps the most nefarious, evil type of spending, because it allows people who earn to keep more of their money. What a horrible, horrible thing. What a horrible concept. But I love this. Tax cuts are no longer spending. This is great. Awesome. Tax cuts are no longer spending until the next time tax cuts are spending. Until the next time a Republican chooses to lower the tax rate. See, Democrats aren't doing tax rates. What Democrats are proposing in this bill, which isn't even fully written yet, which, you know, to hear Kathleen Rampell speak in absolutist terms is absurd because she knows full well that this is not a written piece of legislation that has been scored by the Congressional Budget Office. Nobody knows what's in it. She doesn't care. She just knows that her masters in the Democratic Party said, we've got to go out there and sell this thing, polish this turd. And they sent her over to the Weeble, and this is what they do. But this is not a done deal. But it's good to know that tax cuts are no longer spending, unless and until, again, a Republican. What they're proposing, what Democrats are proposing, by the way, is not a reduction in your tax rates. What Democrats are proposing are deductions, credits, usually refundable credits, which is welfare for people who don't actually pay income taxes. They want to control your behavior. So if you want to keep more of your money, you must act in a certain way. And if you look at and you sit there and you've probably done your taxes at some point, and you said, my God, what kind of evil Caligulan monster comes up with this tax code? The reason it's there is it's control. Now, both parties engage in this control, but Democrats revel in it because it generally is they who institute these things and then decry them later, by the way. But they say, if you do X, you will be able to keep more of your money. If you buy one of these things, you'll be able to keep more of your money. If you, give to this sort of charity, you'll be able to keep more of your money. They put in all sorts of little things in the tax code that individually may seem like good ideas, but collectively will have you running through hoops and jumping through hoops to try and find a way to conform to living with the way that the Democrats would like you to live, to be able to keep more of your money. That's what she's talking about by tax cuts. Do what we tell you to do, and you can keep more of your money. To a liberal Democrat like Kathleen Rampell, that seems like a pretty good deal, although eventually, in I'd say 5 years, if Democrats get their way, if the pattern holds, they will be, and she will probably be on the same show again going, you believe we've got to get rid of these tax loopholes that are helping all these rich people? Why? Because it'll be the rich people who will be much more inclined and easily able to jump through those flaming hoops that the Democrats set in the tax code. And Democrats will decry them. They won't do anything about it. They'll decry them and promise to close them if you just give them power. And the circle of life continues. That's how the Democrats work. They create a problem. They denounce the problem. They offer a solution to the problem that perpetuates the problem. They decry the problem. They offer so on and so forth. It just goes on and on and on. God, I'm looking at I did not watch any of the Sunday shows at all. Saturday, I went to Philadelphia. Well, not really Philadelphia. I went to outside of Philadelphia. I think it's west of Philadelphia. I didn't even actually look where Philadelphia was relative to where I was. At a place called King of Prussia, which they got some weird names for cities up there. King of Prussia, Pennsylvania, in Valley Forge. Now, why did I go there? Not for the lovely casino, which is seemingly a lovely casino, if that's what you're into it. There was a giant sports card collectors convention there. And it had been a couple years since I'd been to one, so I thought, I'm going to go. This is a 2-hour drive. Drove up there. Drove back. I was home by 3 o'clock or something like that. But so I slept in because I didn't go to bed early Saturday night. So I slept in and didn't watch any of the Sunday shows. Although Sunday shows are becoming less and less relevant, to be honest with you. They just don't have any guests. And this is kind of illustrates why, and you're not missing anything. I'm looking at the Twitter feed, and I see there's a clip. Quote, President Biden ran on being a moderate, and he's not governing as one. End quote. Like, wow. Who's the freaking genius who said, and of course, it's Meghan McCain. It's Meghan McCain from Meet the Press. Meghan McCain on Meet the Press on Sunday. Now, Meghan McCain might be the loveliest person ever to walk the earth. I don't know. It's not a commentary on the type of person she is. But she is completely irrelevant, or should be completely irrelevant, when it comes to the political commentary world. What has she done? She's never so much as worked on the... Or her dad did. Okay. She was a contributor on Fox. Why? Not because, my God, we have to get her incredible, brilliant, incisive, knowledgeable commentary. No, it was because her dad was John McCain. And so they said, well, John McCain is an important Republican when he was alive, even running for president. I think she was a contributor back around the time he was running for president or thinking about running for president. And they just threw some money at her and said, all right, well, you can have some money here. Here you go. And you suck. And this is how you suck up to people in Washington, D.C. You can't give them money. You can't hire Senator John McCain to be a contributor on your network. So you hire his daughter. And then they know, hey, look, your daughter works for us. Maybe you give us an interview. Maybe you could give us a quote. Maybe you could do this. Maybe you could do that. And it works. It works. So you've got all of these unqualified people. I've never met her. I don't care to meet her. But what I've seen her say, and she always gets, when she was on The View, she left The View. But she gets these clips that they release. Oh, man, Meghan McCain is great here. And it's okay. It's fine. It's like 12-year-old conservatism. Not like 12 years, like it's old, it's like it's aged. But it's like something you'd expect from a 12-year-old. Like, okay, this is fine. Congratulations. It's not brilliant. It's not really insightful. I suppose it's bringing conservative thought to a different audience. But still, she's not saving the world. And she decided to leave The View. And you think, where does somebody go with no skills? She has no skills. I don't know that she's ever actually worked a job. Her parents are filthy rich. Her late father was a United States senator, but her mother was like a beer wholesale heiress. So she didn't have to work. She probably had a couple of jobs because for political purposes, you can't really have your kid being running around living the life while you're trying to teach responsibility or preach responsibility to the great unwashed and you want them to vote for you. But in general, what has she done? Where does she come at this from? To meet the press? I get it. Daytime cable news? Meghan McCain's perfect for it. It is vapid. It is uninformed. It is something you should never watch. But Meet the Press used to mean something. It really did. Meet the Press was like, ooh, this is Meet the Press. I remember as a kid, Tim Russert on Meet the Press. That dude was good. My favorite was David Brinkley on This Week with David Brinkley and Sam and Cokie. But he's long since gone. But Meet the Press was important. Meet the Press mattered. What happened on Meet the Press on Sunday would be talked about on Monday, would be sometimes talked about on Tuesday and Wednesday, too. And now it's Meghan McCain. And you're tweeting out videos of her going, President Biden ran as a moderate, and he's not governing as one. Well, wow. Congratulations. What happened this morning? I got up this morning, and a big ball of fire came up in the one direction of the sky. But last night when I went to bed, that big ball of fire was on the other side of the sky and it disappeared. Huh? Hey. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Speaking of brilliant, there's a guy, this is, again, seems like this show is heavy Weeble, but it is the Weeble in that he chooses the guests for his show, but he chooses people who are stupid to go on his show. He had somebody who on paper, you think this guy knows what's going on. He's a bright guy. He's a professor of history at Yale University, Timothy Snyder. This is a fairly lengthy clip, a little over a minute, but I just wanted to give it to you all in context because I want to show you how delusional. You know, you've already heard the Weeble talking to Catherine Rampell about weird economic theories that she has about how spending isn't really spending, so on and so forth. Now comes Professor Timothy Snyder, who comes out and just says, look, we need to stop with this fairness business in the media. Now, I would posit that there is no fairness in media. There is no interest in being a fair media where both sides are given arguments. But it is the left that is insisting that there should be no fairness whatsoever. Chuck Todd, the Ginger Avenger, a lot of gingers in the media. The soulless are taking over. The Ginger Avenger over there at Meet the Press famously said last, I guess it was 2 or 3 years ago, that he would no longer have anybody who's a climate denier on his show. There's no, the debate is done. The discussion is over. Stop talking to him about that. They're not going to talk to it. And on other issues where Democrats insist there are no two sides to this. On abortion, it's a woman's choice. There's no two sides to this. There's no reason to discuss or engage with anybody. Well, Professor Timothy Snyder, and if you send your kid to Yale, this is what you're paying for. Professor Timothy Snyder said, we need to stop with this fairness stuff in media. Everybody who's not us is a monster, and they should be treated as such.
Yet he lays out one of these, you know, the exactly what you're describing, how it could all happen in 2024. It is quite unnerving. And you say there's some cowards out there that don't want to talk about it. What do folks in the reality-based media do in the coming weeks? What's your advice for the press corps?
I mean, my advice for the press corps is to drop the fair and balanced about the one party and the other party. Who cares about the parties, right? The parties aren't really the story. The story is whether we have a democracy or not. And the behavior of the parties is the actual story. I mean, so I think that the main thing we have to do, and you guys have done a lot in this direction, is to drop the pretense of American exceptionalism, drop the idea that democracy is just out there like the air we breathe, and make democracy the story itself. We had minimal excuse to be surprised by 2016. We had no excuse to be surprised by the coup attempt in 2020. And if we're not prepared for an attempt for people to take power undemocratically in 2024, then we're just at this point pathetically naive.
Oh, yes, the coup attempt. That horrible coup attempt where new footage was released last week against the government's wishes of people walking into the Capitol building on January the 6th. People were walking into the Capitol building. Now, some dudes in all black managed to pry the doors open. Who they were, they covered up head to toe. They look a lot like BLM Antifa mutants, but whatever. They run off immediately. And in comes a stream of people walking. Not, looking for things to burn, not smashing things over. Walking in rather calmly. I've seen malls that are more violent, if you will, than what was shown in these videos. And you sit there and you go, why didn't the government want these videos out there? Because the government wants to control the narrative. The government wants you to believe that there was a marauding band of monsters with pitchforks and tiki torches and everything storming into the Capitol going, give me members of Congress so that I might kill them. Where is AOC? She must be raped and set on fire and all. And realistically, it was largely elderly walking calmly through a set of doors. Some going one way, others going the other way. Kind of like, hey, do you want to see the rotunda or do you want to see the House chamber? Now, were all of them calm? No. People came in a lot of doors that day. Some were very, very violent. Not many. You can burn down Minneapolis and be called mostly peaceful, but if three people smash a window in the United States Capitol and 500 other people are taking pictures with the statue in Statuary Hall from their state, every single one of them is an attempted murderer. It's weird how that works. BLM Antifa can actually kill people. Not just try to kill people, but can kill people. And it's mostly peaceful. Yes, most of the protesters were not actively trying to murder police officers. Just most of them. But we will call it mostly peaceful anyway. That's okay. That's how the world works. That's how it is. And you get people like Timmy Snyder. Professor Timmy Snyder. Oh, the media needs to stop being fair and balanced. They need to stop all that. Where is this media that is fair and balanced? Where is it? Where is it? Even Fox, no offense to Fox, but come on. Fox, well, we got a Republican and a Democrat. They've got like five Democrats on the payroll that are just professional punching bags. To the credit of Fox, the Democrat counterpoints, quote unquote, are actually Democrats. that are on the payroll. Whereas on MSNBC or CNN, to the extent that they offer balance, they got Michael Steele out there. Here's former RNC chairman Michael Steele. What are your thoughts? I agree with everything that whatever that Democrat just said. I think that the Republicans should be disbanded and slowly hunted down to extinction. Same over at CNN. Their so-called Republicans are not Republican in any measurable way, in any recognizable way, but they just go, oh, well, he used to be a Republican. He used to be the dog catcher in some town you never heard of in the middle of Ohio, and now he's a CNN contributor. Conservative. He once worked for the Dole campaign back in 1996 as the state director for Nebraska. He's a conservative commentator representing the Republicans in this debate against 15 liberals. So-and-so. I'm like, all right. And they come out and they go, I generally agree with what the Democrats are saying. That's it. That's how, that's your balance. And here is this guy on CNN going, we need to get rid of that balance stuff. And we need to recognize that we are going to face another coup if we are not prepared. What, why Brian Stelter there? Why the Weeble is seeking media advice on how the media should cover something from a professor of history remains a mystery. It's supposed to be Brian's job to say that, but he can't. He's just not very bright. So he invites people on who he knows will say what he wants to say, but can't really say. He wants to. Boy, he wants to. Just like somebody's retweets. I always say, retweets don't equal endorsements. But if you watch it, you discover the pattern that, hey, all this person does is retweet left-wing insanity. When he retweets anything conservative, he has some commentary arguing against it. But when it comes to media matters or whatever, he just retweets it. Like, well, okay, you can say retweets don't equal an endorsement, but you sure as hell are endorsing all the stuff you retweet, just for the record. But to have, that's how it works. They have those guests on. And the potato obviously agrees with Snyder. But Snyder is advocating there at the end that you need to take preemptive action against Americans, because if you don't, then you're going to run the risk of having another another attempted coup. I'm sorry, that was his word. Attempted coup. Preemptive action against people, declaring them guilty for things with which they had nothing to do, and punishing them along the way, preemptively again, because of who they are and your assumption based on who they are, of what they'll do. It seems like there's a word for that. Seems like there... Oh, yes. Well, you could choose so many of them. All of them ends with isms or is, right? Fascism, communism, communist, fascist, whatever you want. And this goes out to every home in the country, really, with CNN. Luckily, only about 500,000 homes choose to watch it, and they are lost. But this is the mindset of the left. So when you go up against somebody, when you're sitting there and you're thinking, well, this is a fair fight, Marquis of Queensberry rules, recognize in your brain that they're not interested in a fair fight. They're not interested in an honest discussion. That you cannot engage with most of these people. There is no point. All of this whining and crying about, we need bipartisanship. If you hear these Democrats talk about that $3.5 trillion spending bill, and we need bipartisanship, we need, where are the Republicans on this? There's no, well, what do you want, Republicans? Where can we find some middle ground? There is no, we've got this massive spending bill on so-called infrastructure, and you guys have some infrastructure needs too. We all agree on certain ones. Why don't we take the things we all agree on and put them in their own bill and just pass that? Why don't we do that? They kind of did that with the, well, it depends on who you're talking to, $700 billion to $1.5 trillion infrastructure bill. But then Democrats did what with that? They said, oh, we got bipartisanship. Oh, golf clap, golf clap. We've got this wonderful deal on infrastructure, which I will not sign, and which Congress will not pass, and which no one will vote for unless and until we also get the $3.5 trillion. Now, what? Yeah, Democrats demanded that they wanted $5 trillion. And Republicans said, we're not going to spend $5 trillion. No. So they said, all right, well, we agree on this stuff. Here's $1.5 trillion. We'll call that a day. And Republicans stupidly trusted Democrats and said, all right, fine. The Democrats came out and said, oh, by the way, this won't pass unless we get the other $3.5 trillion. And you sit there and you go, why did I bother? Why did I bother dealing with these people? And you really kind of have to wonder why the hell you did bother dealing with those people. It's like keeping a pet alligator. And then it goes, it bit me. Like, well, yeah, but I feed it every day. Yeah, but it's an alligator, okay? Much like you, that's got a pea-sized brain. It's not going to remember a whole lot. So it is going to bite you. Why? Because that's what it does. It doesn't matter that you throw raw chicken in there every day. It doesn't go, hey, there's Ed with the raw chicken. I love Ed. He's a great guy. No, it goes, I'm going to bite that thing over there. I'm going to bite whatever comes my way. You put anything in front of me, I'm going to bite it. We'll figure the rest out later. That's what it's like dealing with Democrats. Don't deal with them. Only on your terms. Only on your terms. And then only maybe. I want to shift before we run out of time to the Department of Homeland Security and the Secretary of Homeland Security. A guy named Alejandro Mayorkas. Alejandro Mayorkas. Oh, the Democrats love Mayorkas. He is of Latin descent. Where exactly? I can't remember. I think he's Cuban. Doesn't really matter. He's a liberal. He's a progressive. And progressives are progressives first. And he's quite the dutiful soldier that he will do whatever is necessary for him to do in order to advance the liberal agenda. So it was just a couple of days ago, really, I would say a couple of weeks ago, but it wasn't even that long ago, that our southern border was inundated with masses of Haitians coming from Peru, from Chile, from Argentina, from you name the country not Peru, up through Central America, through Mexico, to the middle of Texas to come into the border and say, oh, did you hear that there was an earthquake over in Haiti? Oh, poor us. We're refugees. We're seeking refugee status. Help us, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're our only hope. Please take us in. And the Biden administration, knowing full well this was a fraud, that these people were not from Haiti, not directly anyway, they said, sure, come on in. You pinky swear to vote Democrat disproportionately in the future? You do? All right, come on in. We care deeply about you. We care deeply, deeply about you. So they were gathering under, they were marching in and gathering under a bridge called the International Bridge in Del Rio, Texas. And there was 5,000, and there was 7,000, there was upwards of 15,000 people living under this bridge, storming across. It was so bad that the Border Patrol was so overwhelmed that it was became a humanitarian crisis, not just because of COVID, because, you know, Fauci, what, 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, is like, college football, super spreader event. Shouldn't have college football games with crowds. Crowds are too big. They're not masks. This is terrible. And we're a month later, and there's no massive outbreak anywhere associated with college football because President Fauci doesn't know what the hell he's talking about. He is a political animal, and that's it, plain and simple. But under the bridge down in Texas, nobody's saying, hey, this could be a super spreader event. And it was so bad. The Border Patrol was so overwhelmed that the illegal aliens who hadn't bothered to come across the border yet in Mexico, they're just hanging out because there wasn't, you run out of room under a bridge pretty quick. They want the shade. So they were living in Mexico. They were sending food and supplies to the Haitians. The Haitians in Mexico were sending stuff to the Haitians in the United States. That's how screwed up that situation was. That's how messed up the whole thing was. And everybody's like, hey, well, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? And the Biden administration started getting questions about it. They started getting questions about why is it that these people are being released, that they aren't being tested for COVID before they're released. Now, the president of the United States had just threatened, promised really, to fire every government employee and, you know, discharge from the military every soldier who refused to get the jab in a timely enough fashion for Grandpa Badfinger's liking. And yet you can have 15,000 people march across the southern border and nobody bothers to swab a single nose. Nobody bothers to care about any of that. And then they're put on planes and boats and whatever else and just shipped off to wherever, anywhere in the United States. People began to notice that. It became an embarrassment. Now that conservatives didn't care for the illegal alien horde marching across the southern border, didn't bother Democrats. They didn't care. Who cares? Eh, Republicans. If they're upset, all the better. But then some moderates and some Democrats started saying, what is going on here? This is not right. There are a lot of Democrats out there, particularly off-white Democrats, brown and black Democrats, who are refusing to get the vaccine, who are the least vaccinated groups in the country, who are looking up in New York and being banned from restaurants, told we don't serve your kind around here. Brought back some bad memories of last time Democrats set up a system where you could tell patrons at your business, particularly a restaurant counter, we don't serve your kind around these parts. They needed a distraction. It was starting to impact Joe Biden's polls. They had to get rid of this problem. And so what happened? Over the course of one day, one 24-hour period, miraculously, the thousands upon thousands of people living under International Bridge in Del Rio, Texas, were gone. They weren't, you know, magically transported someplace else. They weren't sent back to Mexico. They were released into the wild. They were let go. They expedited not their processing, which would then lead to them, you know, the remain in Mexico program. That would lead to them going back to Mexico or realistically being deported back to Haiti or whatever country that they actually came from. No, they were released into the United States of America. So Secretary Mayorkas, who oversaw all of this, this bastardization of United States law, an impeachable offense if there ever was one, and realistically a crime if you want to get down to it, Secretary Mayorkas was on Fox News Sunday with Chris Wallace, and Chris Wallace brought this up. He had some questions for the secretary. The secretary had wildly unsatisfying answers. But listen to this first go-round, where Secretary Mayorkas does all he can to dutifully not answer the question. Burns a lot of calories trying to get away from answering the question.
I want to start with those 30,000 Haitian migrants who came across the border into Del Rio, Texas, since September 9th, as you say. You say that 12,400 will have their cases heard by an immigration judge, and another 5,000 are being processed by your department. Mr. Secretary, of those 17,400, how many have been released into the U.S. and how many more potentially could be released into the U.S.?
So, Chris, about 3,000 are actually in detention. And we make those detention determinations in the best interest of the American public. Others are in immigration court proceedings. They are monitored by us. We impose conditions upon them. So we keep in touch with them and ensure their appearance in court as the law requires.
Did you hear an answer in there? No, you didn't. You heard a word salad. Boy, howdy, was that word salad being tossed. But you didn't hear an answer. He didn't want to give an answer. The answer is certainly a Fox audience, but even an American audience is not, his answer would not be satisfactory. So Chris Wallace, to his credit, occasionally he does a good job. He circles back and reminds Mayorkas that that was really neat, but not at all what was asked. And he asks him, and then he gets an answer. The answer is, I would say it's disturbing, but can something you fully expect be disturbing?
But to answer my question directly, of the 17,400 that weren't deported back or didn't return on their own to Mexico, how many of them how many have been released into the U.S.?
They're released on conditions, yes. And approximately, I think it's about 10,000 or so. 12,000.
Have been released?
Yes.
And of the 5,000 that are still in process?
We will make determinations whether they will be returned to Haiti based on our public health and public interest authorities.
So are we talking about a total of 12,000, or could it be even higher?
It could be even higher.
It could be even higher. Look, we don't know. However many show up, that's how many you'll get. We'll figure out later whether or not we can just ignore the law and let them stay, nor reality of the fact they're not actually from Haiti. They haven't lived in Haiti in 10 or 20 years, that they're actual citizens of a third country, Chile, Peru, or not Peru, Panama, whatever, Colombia, doesn't matter. Well, we don't care. We want them. Well, they want them here. Democrats want them here. Desperately want them here. That's the Secretary of Homeland Security. Those 12, 15, 17, 30, however many it was under the bridge, we deported back to Port-au-Prince a handful of them. But if any woman said she was pregnant, she was let in. Any woman who was with a family said she was pregnant, was let in. Single women said she was pregnant. Didn't have to prove it. No EPT or whatever, pee sticks down there at the border. No, just come on in. Oh, you're pregnant. Go ahead. Those are the people who should actually be deported first and foremost. We want you back in your home country before your kid is born. You should be the first to go. Not only birthright citizenship, but because there's no way on God's green earth you are ever going to be able to repay the cost of delivering your child that you are about to impose on this country. You ain't picking up the check. You got 30 grand in your pocket? I don't think so. So you are a net loss for the United States of America the second you set foot in this country as an illegal alien. You're a double, triple, quadruple net loss. If you're coming over here to have your kid, oh, it's great for you. The welfare benefits alone more than make up for whatever you gave the drug cartels to smuggle you up here. But we'll never recoup that money, ever. So they should be the ones out first. And instead, because of compassion. Oh, it's so compassionate, they say. Because of compassion, in the name of love. Suddenly everybody's Bono at the border. In the name of love, we must let people in. And so they were let in. They were released into the country. Now, none of them were tested for COVID. Just the day before, or 2 days before, last week, Alejandro Mayorkas was at the White House at a press briefing. And he admitted illegals were not tested for COVID, and he has no idea. Moreover, he has no concern. How many of them are coming? Is it a super spreader event? Who knows? Whatever the new variant is, know that it's coming in the southern border. What Delta came in the southern border, Mu will come in the southern, whatever else you got will come in the southern border. Why? Because the variants are being produced by and large in third world hellholes, where the governments are so inept and corrupt that they can't get their people treated, vaccinated, or treated with drugs or whatever. And they're the ones most likely to come marching across the border. And besides, people from the westernized first world, they're not allowed to fly to this country. Not yet, anyway. Biden announced that, well, November you might be able to start traveling. And that's it. So we're welcoming in masses from the unvaccinated world, the heavily infected world, letting them Johnny Appleseed their asses across the country, and we're all supposed to pretend, hey, man, it's no big deal. This is just normal. Here's Secretary Mayorkas from last week admitting they have no idea how many people have been infected. They don't even seem to care.
Congregation under the bridge, I mean, congregating there, you're just mentioning COVID. What is the situation there? I know that the crowd has been dispersed. Do we know who has tested positive, if people got sick, any kind of symptoms among this group of 15,000, you said?
Yes, so we did not test that population of individuals. I do not know whether anyone was sick with COVID.
Yeah, we don't test them. I don't know. We don't know. Nobody, only the shadow knows which evil lurks in the bloodstreams of men. You imagine this is under Donald Trump, the media would be absolutely apoplectic. They would be insane. They would be, Jim Acosta would need to be physically restrained from charging after Donald Trump for an answer like that. Or anybody, any Trump administration official. Like, what in the hell? No, this is unacceptable. You're hurting people. Don't you understand? But because he's a Democrat, no big deal. And lastly, in the Mayorkas front, I want to play you this just in the sense of irony, because he tweeted this out this morning. They're still pushing, doing the, if you see something, say something thing at Department of Homeland Security. They mean, you know, if you see some sort of violent extremist, as long as they're not Muslim, then tell. If you see a Muslim doing something weird, that, or anybody who isn't white, that, or conservative, that's probably hate crime to report on it. But otherwise, if you see something, say something. And he's doing a PSA for that. He can't deliver the lines worth a damn, but he did. He recorded this just the other day.
If you see something, say something is more than a slogan. It's how we protect ourselves, our loved ones, and our communities. You play a key role by recognizing and reporting suspicious activity. It's about all of us. Why do I see, say? To protect my wife and our daughters, to make my community safer, and to empower others to do their part.
Yes, if you see something, say something. It's for your own good and for your family and for your community. Okay, Alejandro Mayorkas, I see something. Down on the southern border, it's called the wide open border, where you're inviting in a whole bunch of infected, virus-loaded, God knows what else they're bringing across there, measles, mumps, who knows. They're bringing it across the southern border, and they're actually people. Government officials, I believe, that this conspiracy reaches all the way up to the higher echelons of our government. You say, see something, say something. I believe that higher people in our government are conspiring to ignore and thwart the laws actively of the United States of America. I'm not even kidding you, Secretary Mayorkas. You need to get down on the southern border. You need to shut down the southern border for the love of God and for the safety of your community and your family and your friends and everything. You need to put a stop to this, at least until the pandemic is over, right? Wrong. They don't give a damn. They don't give a damn about Americans. They're replacing us. Oh, that's too controversial to say. According to the Anti-Defamation League, it's wildly racist to say. Well, then what else is there? They're just trying to kill. Maybe we could say they're just trying to kill Americans by bringing in new strains of COVID. Is that less controversial? Both are true, whether they intend it that way or not. As I wrap it up for today, I want to I just saw this. I don't know why. They don't impact my life. But it's the smug hypocrisy of rich liberals. Meghan Markle and Prince Harry. They were at the Global Citizen Festival, wherever that, I don't even, somewhere in Europe. I think it was in Paris. I love it. They live in Los Angeles. They want to lecture about climate change, so they flew to Paris. They're not flying Southwest to Paris. They're flying private, which you're not allowed to do. You're the problem if you do that. Anyway, they told the crowd about vaccine equity at the Global Citizen Festival. They said, quote, "My wife and I believe that where you're born should not dictate your ability to survive," end quote. Yeah. It's always the rich liberals who have layers of security, who have walls around their compounds, to keep people who care. They care so deeply about the people they spend an awful lot of time and energy and money trying to keep away. You ever notice that? Nobody cares more about the common man than Oprah or Barbara Streisand or the Prince Harry or whatever. Try and have a conversation. Go knock on their gate. You wouldn't even get into their gated community. But if you managed to get past their gated community, you wouldn't get to their gate. You'd knock on their door at Oprah's compound and say, "Oprah, I understand you care deeply about blue collar. I'm blue collar. I'd very much like to have a conversation with you." Stedman would be calling 911 by the time you took your finger off the button for the buzzer. So pathetic. vaccine equity. Nobody should do that. Okay, yeah. Nobody should dictate their wealth based on their lineage either. Actually, if we could just get rid of all the lineage stuff, Prince Harry, we would have never had to have heard of you. So be careful what you wish for there. Again, another ginger. Another soulless ginger. They're taking over, ladies and gentlemen. That is all the time we have today, but we have more time tomorrow. That's the beauty of how days work. Have yourself a wonderful day. We'll be back to break down all the stupidity that happens till the next time we talk. Thanks for listening.